Tanya 200. We're up to chapter 50 of Tanya, getting close to conclusion. In the previous chapters, the Rebbe spoke about a catalog of loves, of different kinds of love that the heart contains. Not the kind of love that we need to create, the kind of love that exists in the heart. This is the nature of the heart to contain these forms and types of love, and we need only to exercise them or to activate them, each one serving and containing a unique emotion, a unique feeling, and a unique bond between the lover and the beloved. He mentioned the love of "you are my life." There is a love, "you are my parent, my source of life. Your life comes first." There is the love that is compassionate love. What am I doing to you by not loving you, by not serving you? And then there is the love that the Rebbe describes as equally available to all people. This is a love that is inclusive rather than exclusive, because it doesn't depend at all on our virtue, on our talent, on our abilities, on our sensitivities. On the contrary, the more we recognize our lack of all of those talents, all of those virtues, the greater is our love. What kind of love is this? This is the love that is called the reflection. Like water reflects the face. Whatever face you show the water, that's what you're going to get reflected back. If you smile, the water, the reflection will smile back. If you frown, it will frown back. And this love, this reflective love, which is a reciprocal love, when we love someone because they love us, and like a mirror, we can't help but reflect love back, because hearts react to each other like mirrors. So when a heart loves a heart, the second heart has to love back. It is so real, it is so true, that even unconsciously we do that. If someone loves us, even without telling us or showing us, we automatically, instinctively love back. When they do show their love, our response is all the stronger. When the love is totally undeserved, out of proportion, when a king loves a simple person, then the reciprocal love is even greater. And so our love for God comes not from our understanding of God's greatness, because then all people would be on different levels. The truly wise would have a much greater love. The simple would have a much lesser love, a lower love. So it's not coming from our talents, it's coming from God's initiative, where God chooses us, shows us his love, even when we are not worthy. So the more we realize we're not worthy, the more we love God, and in this love, we are all equal. No one can love God more in this reciprocal fashion than anyone else, because it's an instinctive reflex that we love back when we are loved. So all we need to do is recognize God's love. In other words, feel grateful. Now this all-inclusive kind of love that makes us all equal, that joins us all together, which is called the reciprocal love, is enhanced by a number of considerations. Number one, that God shows his love all the time, not just on one historic occasion where he took us out of Egypt. Every time a human being who is human in all of his ways and all of his waking and sleeping hours is invited to fulfill a commandment, to observe a holiday, to study Torah. That's an invitation into God's personal life, because these things are meaningful and significant to God. Which is why if a person says, I've tried fulfilling a commandment, I've tried to observe a holiday, but I don't feel a need for it. I don't need it. It doesn't do anything for me. The misunderstanding here is that we're assuming that God gave us the commandment because of what it means to us, or what it will mean to us if we observe it for whatever length of time. But the truth about the mitzvah, what a commandment really means, is that this act, this day, these words are precious and meaningful and important to Him. That's why they are His commandments. These are the things that He needs out of creation. So when we fulfill a commandment and we don't feel a need for it, that is not surprising, and that's not a failing, that's not wrong. We may not feel any need for it, because it's not coming out of our need, it's coming out of His need. So we fulfill the mitzvah because it's important to Him. It's intimate and significant to Him. And by performing that mitzvah, we're basically entering into God's private life, into God's personal life, into the chamber of the king, to the palace, so to speak, and participating in that which is most meaningful to Him. That's one consideration. The other consideration is that when God creates us in order to have this relationship with us, in order to invite us into His private thoughts and intimate life, in order to create us, He has to contract and conceal and restrict Himself from the ultimate infinite presence or light to a totally finite, restricted, and concealed light. Because if God were revealed, we wouldn't be able to be the finite creatures that we are. If God were revealed and obvious, we wouldn't have freedom of choice. We wouldn't have a personality. In order for us to be what we are and be able to serve God by elevating ourselves out of this finite, unholy condition, to become united with God, in order for this condition to exist, God has to conceal His greatness, His endlessness, His infinity. And so in our reciprocal love, we also are willing to forego the things that we consider important to ourselves, which may not in fact be important. But we're certainly willing to forego those things in response to God's initiative, in response to God's sacrifice, so to speak, of putting aside what is great about Himself, and that's truly great. We are certainly willing to put aside those things that we think or imagine make us great or important. We put all of that aside in order to serve God properly. Now, all of these loves mentioned before all exist within the heart. The heart carries these kinds of attachments, these kinds of strings that bind us with those we love. If we don't use the various kinds of love, they remain in potential, they remain dormant and unused. So if we deny those loves, if we don't activate those loves, it's not just the person who should be loved that we are denying, we're denying ourselves. We are less alive. We're not experiencing our true selves, because our true selves carry all of these loves. And somewhere in life, these, all of them, need to be expressed. Somebody, somewhere, has to feel as important to us as life itself. That's the love called my soul. You are my soul. You are my life. somewhere, sometime, we have to feel that someone is so much more significant than ourselves that we are willing to risk our own lives, cancel our own lives, in order to serve them. That's called the love of a parent. Somewhere, we should feel such a compassion for the suffering of another because of the lack of love that we should be moved to love them. And sometime in life, at least, we should feel this reciprocal love. Love back when you're being loved. Even if the love is not expressed properly, correctly, totally, thoroughly, but where there is love for us, our heart wants to respond. And if we don't allow it, we're stifling not only the relationship, we're stifling ourselves, our own heart. But what all these loves have in common is that they're all kind. They all come from the impulse of kindness in the soul. There's also the impulse of severity. Severity produces its own kind of love. And although for this we need to be free of sin, so that it's not interfering with the activities of the soul, but to some degree we should try to experience this kind of love as well. And this love is called the to and fro dance of love. The Rotze Veshuv. And that is what it says in Kabbalah. If your heart yearns, be sure to return. In Rotz Libecha, if your heart is running, if it's yearning, remember to return. And what that means is that in addition to the kind of love that comes from kindness, which is the desire to get closer to the one you love, but in this closeness, there is a merging and a oneness, but not a giving up of self. In other words, I like what I am, and I want to enhance that by getting closer, by drawing closer to the one I love. That's called kindness, that's called chesed, because there's no canceling, there's no rejection of where I am and who I am. On the contrary, I just want to enhance what I am. The impulse or the instinct of severity, the attribute of severity, is more like fire than water, where the fire wants to tear itself away from the wick. In other words, the tendency of the flame is to rise and to detach, separate itself from the wick. And although it will extinguish itself by doing so, this is the nature of severity. It doesn't like where it is. It wants to leave this place for a better place. That's the impulse of severity, or sometimes called fear. Now what happens when we arouse this kind of love, where the soul feels that it wants to separate from the body. It doesn't want to be itself. It doesn't want to enhance its own existence. It wants to cancel its own existence so that it can be completely and totally lost and absorbed within God. This is the kind of love where I don't want to be me, I want to be you. Not I want to have you in my life, not I want to merge with you so that we will become one. I don't want to be me because in being me, I'm missing, lacking something of you. And maybe we can compare this to the kind of love that an elderly couple have after being married for many years in their old age. They don't just want to have each other. They want to be each other, and they can't exist without each other. So there comes a point where the love demands not only a closeness, not only a merging, not only a oneness, but an exclusiveness. The fact that I am me, as much as I will love, and as much as I will be devoted, and as much as I will sacrifice, it will still be me loving you. And that, in some way, keeps the me separate from the you. There is this desire to expire, to completely extinguish my own identity in order to become you. Now, of course, that can be an unhealthy thing. The motivation can be an unhealthy one, and then nothing works and nothing happens. But here we're talking about a legitimate impulse in the heart, not a weakness or an emotional problem, but a genuine, healthy instinct in the heart that is experienced rarely, but is very, very valid and precious. And that is, I want to be you, not just have you. Now, when the heart feels this kind of love, which is coming from the nature of the godly soul that doesn't feel very comfortable being in a body, being in the physical universe, being in this existence at all, and from time to time it gets really impatient with its own existence and identity and wants to shed the identity and just merge into God. When we feel this feeling, the Torah tells us, remember to return. Return means reflecting on the fact that although I don't want to be here, I have no reason to be here, I see no purpose in being alive in this physical, mundane, ungodly existence. That's all my personal perception. I don't feel a significance or a purpose to life. But God created me because He needs me here. He needs a dwelling place in the lowest world, which I can facilitate, I can make this happen for Him, and that's why He created the world, and that's why He created me, which means that God needs me here. So even when I don't want to be here, even when I don't see the justification for this kind of existence, on earthly existence, I have to return. I have to remember to settle back into the physical existence, into the routine of life, and go through life performing the commandments that cannot be performed when the soul leaves the body. So this is called the to and fro, the two poles. The nature of the soul pulls me away from the world. I don't want to be a separate entity. I don't want to have freedom of choice. I don't want to have a relationship with God. I want to merge into God. I want to disappear into God. That's the impulse of a godly soul. The other pull is our responsibility. I didn't create myself. I didn't bring myself to this world. I was placed here by the Creator for reasons precious to Him. And so I have to accept that mission and return. Remember to settle back. Now, this kind of experience is the ultimate holy activity or movement that exists between creation and creator. Now, although the important thing, the essential thing, is to return, to settle into life, and to serve God by being human and physical and so on, it is still necessary and beneficial to experience the longing or the running, at least on occasion, so that the settling back is not a selfish one, but is an altruistic one. I live because I'm supposed to, because there's a purpose to it that serves the Creator. Whereas if I just accept my existence and never experience this longing, this desire to expire, then my presence in this world can become habitual. I'm here because I'm here. I start to feel like this is where I belong, that I'm not here for any particular meaningful purpose. And then the return, the settling into life, loses its nobility. It loses its godliness. It becomes natural and habitual. When we have this desire, when we feel this desire to just shed it all and go back to being what a soul originally is, an inseparable, indistinguishable part of God. And then, in spite of that desire, we return, we settle back into our physical existence because this serves God's purpose better. Then our existence on earth, our being finite, our having freedom of choice, having our personality with all the flaws, with all the human imperfections, all of it takes on a great significance and a great meaning. Now this longing and return, this feeling of I want to expire, but I shouldn't, I mustn't, because I'm here to serve God. If we can experience this more often, we would be elevating ourselves to a very sensitized, very sensitive attitude towards life and towards ourselves and towards existence. And it fulfills, it expresses what the Talmud says, that a person is born against his will, and a person dies against his will. Which very simply means that we're not asked if we want to be born, and we're not asked whether we want to die. These things are decided for us without our having any input or any opinion on the matter. The soul doesn't want to come into the body at first, but then it gets accustomed to being on earth and fulfilling commandments, and then when it comes time to die, it doesn't want to leave the body. So we are born against our will, and we die against our will. But on a deeper level, on a service level, the Rebbe says that this, you die against your will, and you're born against your will, means that we have both impulses. We want to be born, in other words, we want to be here on earth, and we want to die, we want to expire and merge or disappear into God. And each of them is against our will. Which means that when we have this desire to cleave to God and expire into godliness, it should be against our will, because we have to remember to return. If that becomes our only will, then we won't return, and we will expire, which is not what God wants. On the other hand, our desire to live should also be against our will. It should not be simply because we like living that we live. It's not just because we are comfortable on earth that we remain on earth. It should be against our will. In other words, we are here not because we want to, but because we're supposed to. Because this is where we have been sent, and this is where our mission can be fulfilled. And so both impulses are not selfish, because they're modified by the opposite impulse. We don't want to be physical, but we are, and we don't want to be disembodied. We don't want to long for the separation of body and soul, and yet we should. So we yearn because it's the right thing to do, and we return because it's the right thing to do. That sounds like a very healthy, rather than narcissistic existence. We're not trapped. Having this option, having this mission, gives us a freedom that is much greater than the freedom of choice between right and wrong. The freedom of choice between right and wrong simply means that I can be a good person, I can be a bad person. I can be holy, I can be unholy. But that's all within the realm of my existence. So I can exist properly or improperly, perfectly or imperfectly. But it's still all restricted to my existence. And to some degree, whichever way I decide to go, whether I decide to be wonderful and perfect, or I decide to be careless and sloppy and indulgent, either way, I am the center of attention. I am the subject. I am the center of my universe. That's not great freedom. But when God gives us this option, we can either accept our nature as given and natural, or see our nature as part of a mission and a purpose. And how do we do that? By disassociating. If we can step out of our existence on occasion and yearn to not be, yearn to be Him, not to be me, to be God, not to be creation, but to be Creator. When I can step out of my own existence and really dismiss it, despise it almost, because I want to be somewhere else. I don't want to be here. I don't want to be this. Then I can look at what this is from a more objective perspective. And I can see the value of it, the virtue of it, the meaning of it, the purpose of it. And then when I settle back, when I accept that purpose and that mission, and I return in my emotions, in my mind, from the yearning to expire back to the acceptance of my mission and my purpose, then my existence becomes a noble one, not a narcissistic one. I'm not the center of my universe. I don't take my existence for granted. I'm not here simply because I happen to be here. I'm here with a reason. Life has a reason. Existence has a purpose. And I accept that purpose because I've been able to step out of it for a moment and look at it from God's perspective. And the same is true in reverse. The desire to get closer to God also is not merely an instinct of the soul, but it has a purpose. And the purpose is to enhance the mission for which God created me. Because by being able to experience this longing, this desire to expire, I gain a new perspective on my physical existence and my place in the scheme of things. And once I accept that, and I am willing to serve God, even though I'm not stuck on life, I'm not stuck on being me, I don't have to be me, I don't have to have the things I thought I had to have, but rather I am here to serve a greater purpose. I'm here to satisfy some part of a vast eternal plan for which the Creator created me. That's a whole different life.